Well, members, I'm gonna gavel us to order here, and we have a quorum now. So I know Representative Hilty was looking at the minutes from a few moments ago, and would like to move them.
Certainly would, Mr. Chair. I would move adoption of the minutes from the last meeting, which was sometime January 21st.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Hilty. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes of January 21st, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Hearing none, the minutes are approved. I'm going to remind people that this Wednesday, Destination 2025, which was a big issue that we dealt with in the last biennium, we requested a report on kind of a roadmap, a plan for knowledge-based, technology-based economic development, and they have spent the last 24 months putting it together. It's going to be presented Wednesday. Registration starts at 4, and the presentation starts at 4:30 at the Minnesota History Center, and I will announce it at the beginning and at the end of the meeting today. So plan on hearing that one a second time.
Mr. Chair, we're going to announce also that this is concurrent with the joint meeting of the Finance and Ways and Means Committee.
And the early childhood. Actually, Representative Hilty, they should be done with the presentation by 6, so you just have to give up the food and drink.
I had already arrived at that conclusion.
So had I, because the Ways and Means Committee and Finance is having joint hearing Wednesday night at 6, and I will be back for that myself. And then the early childhood and Rochester. So Wednesday is a busy night. This is an important piece for our particular committee. I hope it starts early enough for people to get to and see. But we've beaten that one up enough for a while. We're going to have an overview today of the Department of Labor and Industry missions, goals, and programs. And it's an old colleague, old friend of ours that is going to, you know, join us at the table, Commissioner Steve Swigum, and he will present. So, Commissioner Swigum, welcome to our committee. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Chairman Mahoney. Thank you very much. And Chairman Mahoney, looking at the membership you have on the committee here, I don't think I've had a chance to present to any of them in other committees other than yourself, Chairman. So I think maybe this will be about the third time you've heard an overview of the department and the various goals and how we are reaching those. And so please, yourself, I beg your patience.
You know, it is always nice to have a department that actually has missions and goals that's stateable. So it's not a problem to hear it a third or fourth time.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, if it'd be okay, I would I'd maybe go to the a little bit of the overview of the department first for members, go through the various units we have at your Department of Labor and Industry, and then go to some of the goals and the performance measures that we have in results in meeting those goals, both talking about OSHA complaints, how soon we respond to those when we do get a complaint. Talking about the reduction in workplace injuries, which is obviously a goal of our OSHA department. Talking about the response that we have in dispute resolution and workers' compensation when you enter that system. I will mention a few of those things after I do the overview, if that's okay.
Commissioner Swigum, that's just fine. We've been overviewed to death in this division, so I think that's a good idea to go over it. Brevity is probably, and giving the members time to ask some questions would probably be greatly appreciated, although your department's pretty well run, and you know, you actually haven't gotten many questions in any of the other committees, so, but then there will be a caucus after this, for at least for the Democrats, so.
Okay. I think
the floor is yours.
I think there's an announcement today that will probably bring some attention forward to Mr. Chairman. I think there's a budget announcement at 1 o'clock. Mr. Chairman, if you will, I will take about 12 minutes then to do the overview and about 5 or 6 minutes to do the goals and then open up for the questions you might have. Members, to give you an idea of what your department does for you and your citizens around the state of Minnesota, let me focus in on just 3 or 4 actions to give you an idea of what we do do. When we look at workplace safety and we try to enhance workplace safety, that'd be our number one goal, of course, is to keep people safe on the job site and in your homes. Earlier this year, we were up in Representative Pepin's district, and we recognized a company up there that was a business and the laborers who were building the new Maple Grove Hospital, Joyce. We finally got it passed after a couple of years. Congratulations to you and your community. But very important, members, was a recognition of this company that had met standards over and above our national OSHA standards in relationship to workplace safety, and was gone through a significant period of time with no lost days in regards to any accidents or any injuries on the job site that was at the Maple Grove Hospital. The department has been in northwestern Minnesota, and we've enforced some of our child labor laws, where we haven't had an establishment that was serving liquor at this eating establishment, hiring 14 and 15 year olds. That's a no-no according to the law, and of course we investigated, we enforced, and we penalized that abuse of child labor. We have been in a district of citizens that you represent to make sure that we enforce the law for child labor in relationship to 15, 16, 17-year-olds working before, at least 14, 15-year-olds working before 7 o'clock in the morning. That has been violated. We did enforce, we didn't investigate. Those are the types of investigations that we do from OSHA to workers' compensation to our labor standards unit, child minimum wage, the prevailing wage issues which we investigate. Mr. Chairman, if I could, I would start with the unit that I mentioned first, and that's our OSHA department. Our OSHA department is federal funds, first of all. By the way, overall in the entire department, when you hear the announcement this afternoon in regards to the budget, which I'm sure you're all waiting for at 1 o'clock, and your job before you is significant, members, as you know, when you look at a $5 billion gap to fill. The Department of Labor and Industry receives only approximately $1 million, actually it's less than $1 million now of general fund money. The rest of our monies are either federal money. They are workers' compensation premium assessed monies, or they are fees generated from licenses which we provide throughout the state to plumbers, electricians, contractors. Yourself, Representative Mahoney, did we get your situation straightened out yet for your lapse in... we're working on it. Well, as you would appreciate, Representative Mahoney, I don't think I can show any favoritism, even to the chair of the committee. It might come back to bite both you and me. We are basically fee federal dollars for workers' compensation premium funding. About $900,000 comes from the general fund. So we have a very, very small part of the decision you have in the general fund budget. The OSHA department is $24 million, 99 employees. And of course, our major goal there is to make sure that people go home at night the same way they go to work in the morning. If that is done well and right, we don't even have to enter into the workers' compensation system. The workers' compensation system in Minnesota, members, is 159 employees we have, $159 million, 90 employees, $159 million. Of that $159 million, $142 million is actually used for benefits. That goes directly on to benefits for certain payments we've made to individuals in the state. That would be supplementary benefits, that would be second injury fund benefits. Both of those, by the way, that were eliminated in the 1995 reform bill. but we continue to pay those benefits to individuals previous to 1995 that had supplementary and secondary entry fund benefits. And we also, out of that $142 million, pay about $67 million for individuals who do not have workers' comp coverage. Of course, workers' comp coverage is mandated in the state by employers, but like automobile coverage, not everybody carries it for some reason or another. There are some persons that don't carry it that ought to be carrying workers' compensation. So we do cover that uncompensated workers' comp premium in that as well. The workers' comp system, again, $159 million. Then the third unit that I mentioned very quickly is the CCLD. It's the Construction Licensing Division. 163 employees, $65 million. In the CCLD division, that's the division that issues someplace in the neighborhood of 110,000 licenses. With the advent of the independent contractor licensing, which the legislature passed in 2007, it will be somewhat more than 110,000. How many more, we don't know, but it will certainly be more than 110,000. Members, the CCLD issues licenses and tests all plumbers in the state, all high-pressure pipers, pipe fitters, all electricians, contractors get their licenses as well from our construction code licensing division. Those are basically the stakeholders that I mentioned, and that department is run specifically on the fees that are collected. The fees generated are supposed to run the enforcement, the investigation, and the licensing of that unit. The fourth unit is the labor standards unit, labor standards, and I should say apprenticeship unit. About 19 persons in that department. That is the one unit, members, which does receive general fund money. I think that's appropriate. In the best interest of the welfare of the state, we have child labor law. In the best interest of the welfare of the state, we have minimum wage law. In the best interest of the welfare of the state, we have the labor standards laws that have to be met. That's why it's appropriate that general fund money be used for that division. And not, for instance, funded by fees or funded by penalties or funded by workers' comp premiums. There's really no connection or rationale or association between those funding sources and labor standards. So it's appropriate that general fund money does go there. In the apprenticeship program, we fund the apprenticeship program with basically workforce development dollars. That's about 6.5 persons there in the apprenticeship program that we basically approve, monitor, and the apprenticeship programs throughout the state. The other 12.5 employees are involved in investigation and enforcement of prevailing wage, investigation and enforcement of minimum wage, child labor laws, all the laws that we do have in the state that relate to labor. And then lastly, Mr. Chairman, we do have a general support division. The general support division basically is that to support the four other units of labor standards, CCLD, workers' comp, and OSHA. The general support division involves our legal staff. We have about 12 attorneys. It involves our IT staff. It involves the financial management, the communication staff that support the other units. There's approximately 118 employees in general services, $23 million. Basically, that is assessed to the other departments, greatly funded by the workers' comp premiums that we do charge in the state. Three issues, just very, very quickly. Issues that may come before this committee and or other committees as we talk about issues involving labor and industry. First of all, independent contractor. I mentioned that about 5 minutes ago. We are finding folks we are not receiving as many independent contractor exemption applications as we had anticipated. In 2007, when the bill passed, the fiscal note called for approximately $2.5 million. We assumed that there would be about 25,000 applications for independent contractor exemption certificates. We were going to hire about 14 persons to investigate and to process the applications and go through the applications and investigate and report. Members, we have found significantly less applications than we anticipated. We are over 1,000 now, but it's far less than the 25,000 that had been anticipated. Now, there are maybe many reasons for that. Maybe one, the law is working, and people are deemed workers rather than independent contractors. The whole idea of the law was we were going to deem people as workers, employees of a business, unless they came forward and proved, validated, documented their independent contractor status. So maybe one, that law is working. There, we have seen that there's been a significant movement towards the Secretary of State's office in the form of a limited liability corporation. There has been an increase there. It's the winter period of the time of the year, you know, so probably there's not a lot of construction going on, so a lot of people probably either are not aware yet that they need this certificate, or it's just a lot less construction going on now in January than there is through other parts of the time in Minnesota. And as all of you know, you've been out in the campaign trails, each and every one of you, of the past 6 months. There's just a slowdown in the economy, and there's a lot less construction going on than there was previous years. So that, in effect, may have some consequence on the number of exemptions that have been applied for as well. People may be putting on ice their business for a couple of years, or trying to find other occupations or whatever it may be, because construction being as slow as it is. It does cause us some... is there a question, Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Well, I just wondered if you could address, because we heard this in another committee, you talked about that 14 employees were possible, but that you did not actually hire 14. Could you talk about how many you did hire and what you're doing with those employees, given the lack of licensure requests?
Thank you, President Norton. You are absolutely correct. The law did say in the fiscal notes we were supposed to hire 14 employees. That was we are anticipating $2.5 million of fees for the two-year period of time. We have brought in today about $150,000. We hired 10, Representative Norton, to begin with. I think it was 6 investigators and 4 support staff, I believe, is probably the mix of what there was. Understanding that it's fee generated and fee supported, my suspect is that most of you would look at me and say, how can you run a $2.5 billion unit on $150,000? And how can you have 10 employees for 1,000 licenses? Question our efficiency or lack thereof. We're just not meeting what the law had anticipated. For, again, whatever reason, it doesn't really make much difference, I guess, what the reasons are, but we're going to have to make some changes. We are right now, in fact, I spoke with my assistant commissioner today, Representative Norton, about maybe a couple of those persons being able to move them to another unit within our department where we do have an opening. A couple of those persons will probably be able to bump back to a previous agency that they came from. We maybe will have to also tell a couple of persons that we're not going to be able to utilize their services. The simple fact is we don't have the money. It's not coming in fees. And if I take it or rob it from CCLD or somebody someplace else, that's not very justifiable. So we're going to have to make some significant changes and make them soon. I kind of wish we could wait till, you know, June, July, maybe May, to see what happens with construction, what happens with the number of applications coming forward. But by that time, Representative Norton, we're so far in the red that we wouldn't be able to get ourselves out of the red for a long, long period of time. So we're going to have to make some administrative changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. And I think because you did talk about this being driven by applications and self-supporting, at some point as that money does come in, that will allow you to hire the people that you need to manage the program, if I'm understanding correctly, with the fee-driven.
That is, Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, that is absolutely correct. Depending upon what happens with applications in the future, we would be able to coordinate or correlate our staffing with the needs of investigation we're going to have to keep some investigators. So, you know, I think we're going to have to keep at least 4 investigators there and a couple of support staff. So at this point right now, I think we'll be looking at maybe reducing from 10 to 6 pretty quickly. And there might be adjustments to that later on depending upon how the applications come in. Thank you for that anyway. And I've also spoken with members of the legislature in regards to the why question, you know, why so many less than the law anticipated, and if there might be some necessary changes to the law. Workers' compensation members, always a controversial issue. It would be my hope, it's my hope and prayer that I will have a significant reform bill for you through the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, which is set up by law. They meet tomorrow, by the way. I would hope that we'd have a significant reform bill that will keep controversy from your place. So you're going to have enough controversy, enough confrontation, enough difficult decisions this year anyway, much less getting another controversial issue before you. So hopefully the WCAC will make a significant reform recommendation, which we could bring to you that would be less than controversial, but would be significant reform. I just give you 2 quick charts in workers' compensation. All you probably need to know about the system at this point right now is that and this will be one of the goals, by the way, Mr. Chairman, I talked about in 5 minutes. The number of workplace injuries are going down. And going down, the line shows going down rather dramatically. That's really good. That means we're keeping people safer. Safer on the job site, safer in their homes, safer wherever they're working. Workplace injuries are going down. And have been going down, by the way, for about the last 15 years. Now again, many reasons for that. Resources that businesses put to safety concerns, safety education, new equipment, new technology. There's probably many other reasons that you can get for it going down as well. But the costs are continuing to rise, and rise rather significantly. So the cost per case is going up. Now, if they were going in this somewhat parallel direction of the lines, you wouldn't have as much concern, Mr. Chairman. But going like this, I think we have to at least be aware of the potential consequences in the future that there could be some difficulty in the system. We do not want to get a system in workers' compensation that entered into the chaos that they had in California or Texas or Hawaii. We want to make changes that are prudent, wise, before the system becomes in chaos. And hopefully the WCAC will lead us in a direction to be able to do that. By the way, in preparation for them, Mr. Chairman, we had committees of 4 committees over the summer made up of stakeholders from all over the state, of all different professions, of different stakeholders, and members of the legislature. Representative Nelson and Representative Gunther were there from the House, representing both caucuses in the House. And then prevailing wage, Mr. Chairman, is always a very great issue of this body. You did give us in the labor and industry 3 additional persons last year, in 2007, so a year ago, that were hired last fall to investigate and enforce. We have done so. They have investigated and enforced. Obviously, there's always those who wish us to do more, and there's those who wish us to do less. My statement, Mr. Chairman, to the prevailing wage issue, as well as other issues, not just prevailing wage, is that we will not let our department be used as a weapon by some or a shield by others. There are those out there, interest groups, that would want us to be used as a weapon who want to really get folks for right or wrong. And there's those who would want us to use it as a shield, protect them from maybe not following the law. We will not use it as either a weapon or a shield, Mr. Chairman. We will impartially enforce the law of prevailing wage as it is in session.
Thank you.
And then lastly, if I could get to some goals, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman, just real quickly, and then I will finish up and take comments and questions. Let me start with the graph that I showed you very poorly by my hand, but workplace injuries are going down. Since 2003, in fact, the number of recordable injuries has been reduced by 15,600 in the state cases. Our current rate of reportable injury is 4.6 per 100 full-time workers per year, 4.6. And that is the lowest number and the least total of the cases that are reportable since we began data collection in 1972. Every year it continues to go down, again, for some good reasons, but it's a good direction. It's a good positive thing. In CCLD, plan review, some of you, in fact, on this committee, some of you have called me in the past about various plan reviews that are done by our department, that are the architectural, plumbing, mechanical drawings that are plan reviews. The law says that we should have those plans reviewed within 30 days. Members of the committee, I'm glad to tell you that we get them done in 21 days, most of the time. We have a goal to do it less than the 30, as the statute says, and we have a goal of 21 days, which is bettering what the statute says we should do, and we meet that goal of 21 days 80% of the time, which is I think a good goal for us to achieve. In workers' compensation, dispute resolution, we've seen an increase from 34% to 48% from 1999 to 2007. The resolution of those disputes in a less confrontational, a quicker way for injured workers. In workers' compensation, the denial of coverage, we've seen reduced in the last 3 years from 15.8% to 12.8%, which is probably a fairly positive direction. In the OSHA area, we like to respond to OSHA complaints now. If we get a complaint, if my department gets a complaint in OSHA, fall protection not being there for someone, somebody not wearing their PPE or whatever it might be, we investigate, we initiate the complaint, and we investigate very, very quickly. We initiate our number of days, the average number of days to initiate a complaint investigation in our department is 3.3 days, where the goal of the national average is 9 days. That's the national goal. It's the national average is 9 days. We do it in 3.3. And I think that's passed off to the response of a significant number of good employees that you have at DLI that I will close by telling you are quite performance oriented. I really like the fact that the people you have working at that and your agency at DLI are very results, very goal, very, very performance oriented. It's a pretty good book. Thank you for coming here, for giving me the chance to come and speak about them and their mission. Represent that. Thank you all. Can I take comments, questions, directions, whatever you'd like to talk about?
We have a couple people on the list, and I just saw a quick hand go up over there. So, Representative Hawes?
Thank you. I would like to go back to independent contractors and the license of that, Commissioner. I've only received two calls on this, and both were pertaining to that they thought the fee was too large, and they're at a struggling bottom line, and so I don't think either one put in for a permit. So I don't exactly know if they're not taking not being processed of that work, and they're going to some other area. Do you think this would have been more effective at a lower fee? Do you think that the fee should be adjusted now that we have less people involved?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas, first of all, if we reduce the fees from where it is, I mean, we're going to bring in less monies, at least you would think we'd bring in less monies than we are right now, and I would have to reduce the staff even further than we might have to do. The $150,000 we brought in would be less than $150,000. Are there people that are avoiding the exemption certificate because of the dollar amount, the $150, which, by the way, is in statute, it's in law? Yes. I have not heard that often. I've heard some complaints. I've heard complaints about, you know, what's government getting involved in my business, why another fee, why another license. You know, I've heard those complaints. I haven't had anybody directly tell me $150 is too much. But I'm sure that that is the case in some areas. Now, those individuals that you refer to, make sure you let them know. And this is construction-only members. It's only in construction. But make sure you let those folks know that they will only be able to work directly for a homeowner.
Right.
If they do not have an exemption certificate, they cannot work for a general contractor or any other contractor by law. They still would be, if you hire them to work on your home, they don't need the exemption certificate. Any other place, they'll need the exemption certificate. So you better check out to make sure they know that they're not going to be, has to be hired by a general contractor.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, we did go through that process, and they're quite aware of that, and I appreciate your concern towards them. And I think what they are doing, I suspect, is that for the contractor, there's so limited amount of dollars there, and so they're just doing homes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas, they would be within the law and within the rule if they just worked for a individual homeowner. So they would be okay at that point.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Obermuller?
Thank you. Commissioner, a quick follow-up to Representative Haas's question. The money, contractors are going out and doing the LLC version as opposed to getting their independent contract, do those funds come into your department, or do they stay with the Secretary of State?
Mr. Chairman, no, they do not come to our department.
Okay. So one of the ways, but still accomplishing the same purpose, we're setting up either an individual entity or we're forcing folks onto the employment of the general contractor or another subcontractor in those settings.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's one avenue they could be going. Yes, that's a possibility. We've been trying to check with the Secretary of State's office as to how many contractors have been getting the LLCs, and it's been a little bit difficult to get the information because they don't gather the information by occupation or by profession. But we continue, and we're working with them to try to find a number, so we know what the consequence has been or not. But no, we don't get the dollars.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
My other question relates to the department's involvement in residential construction codes. I'm hearing some in my district about whether the state should be looking at changing back to the UBC or the International Building Code where we are now. Or is there a plan in place to look at that now? Or maybe you can tell me what your involvement is and then what you're doing with that now.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we now operate under the 2006 Building Code, International Building Code, that is about to be updated to the 2009 building code enforcement and regulations. We do have an opportunity in the state as to whether we as a state will adopt the entire code or change the code a little bit. Most of you probably are aware of the fact, Representative Norton, for sure, that I will refer to just one particular item in the new code enforcement that was adopted by the International Council in Minneapolis here last fall. And it's the one recommendation that's getting the most attention and controversy, and that had to do with the fire sprinklers. So that fire sprinklers would be enforced to be part of any new construction, single or two-family construction in the state. And my department did have a hearing and Representative Norton's district, and she was present and took part in it. We had another hearing in Bemidji and one in Minneapolis or St. Paul here. As we prepare for the potential of what our decision will be as far as whether that will be in the code or not over this next year, we will be going through a rulemaking process. We'll also have an advisory committee that will give us recommendations. We'll try to reach out outreach as much as possible. Representative, I would also guess possibly that there are outside interests that may introduce a bill, possibly might introduce a bill to you to make this decision as to whether the fire sprinklers should be mandated in a new construction or not for single family housing. You certainly may do what you want. I may kindly suggest that you leave it up to the department to go through our process of the public hearing and advisory councils and let us take some of the heat so you don't have to on that decision for at least for a time period of the next year.
May I follow up, sir?
Go ahead.
So, Commissioner, one of the concerns I have about change, I do construction litigation during the day job, so I see these issues quite a bit in my law practice. And one of the concerns I have is homeowners, especially in the residential side, really think they're able to rely on their inspector. I know the inspectors who are out doing those houses don't necessarily work for you, but, you know,
Mr. Chairman, they are contracted by us, and then some of them are certainly local. Some local communities have their own inspectors.
Okay. Now, thanks for that clarification, because that was going to be one of my questions. What does the department have a plan when the new codes go into place, when we switch over from the Uniform Building Code to the International Building Code, I want to say 2002, 2004, something like that time frame, was there training put in place for the inspectors, or was it kind of left on your own? You must get up to speed on this on your own if you want to stay contracting with us.
Mr. Chairman, I think that I will be stepping out of my knowledge zone if I tell you exactly what took place as we switched codes to the international code in 2002 and 3. I don't remember. I do know that we do significant amount of training for local building officials and for local inspectors. But what took place in 2002, 3, and 4, I'd be stepping out of my zone, and I didn't bring my assistant with me to. So I apologize. I better not answer. I'll answer wrong.
Fair enough. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot with that. I'm more geared about what are we going to do with, you know, if we switch to the 2009 IBC, what the plan is to making sure that people are up to speed and ready to start doing that.
Mr. Chairman, we do education. We do do outreach. And specifically to your former question, I'm going to ask Mr. Rakowski to find out what we did do when we switched from UBC, the ICC code, is it, and get back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, thank you.
Mr. Commissioner, I follow that relatively close, and we were assured by the building officials that they didn't need you to do, not that they wouldn't want you to, but they didn't need you. They were all up to speed on that particular part, and the ICC was going to cover the cost of all that training, and I took them at their word. We'll have to see if they follow through. Representative Bunnett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I'd like to have a little further discussion on prevailing wage enforcement. There's been quite a bit of discussion in my own community on that issue, as you may be aware. But my question to you is, you said your goal was to impartially enforce the law and not be a weapon or a shield. I'm wondering if you could report to us in terms of how many complaints you receive in the prevailing wage area, how many are actually pursued, and what your criteria are for making those decisions.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biernat, I wish my unit director, Rosalind Wade, was here to answer those questions directly. We will get the answers back to you directly as to what the numbers are. So I can't answer exactly how many complaints we get, the significant number of complaints that do come forward. The department then, through Rosalind Wade and her member and her employees and her unit, try to investigate the validity of those complaints. Certainly some complaints are probably made with more validity than others. Some are probably used as a shield or as a weapon one way or another, and that just happens when you have interests out there. The law states that, Representative Burnett, in your specific community, we did do investigation. We did do enforcement. We did, there was a couple of projects at Mankato State. Is that correct? Yes. They were done, if I remember correctly, at Mankato State. We did find that the prevailing wage in our enforcement investigation was not being applied appropriately. There was some misclassification of workers as to what class they should have been in. And if my memory serves me right, I think we recovered about $28,000 of salary for those workers that were, quote, misclassified and according to the prevailing wage classification. Then the next question got to be, and I think I can state this without avoiding or without being in trouble with data privacy laws. The next question got to be is whether we were going to penalize the businesses that were involved or not. And the law states, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bernath, that there has to be willful and repeated violations of prevailing wage before we go ahead with assessing penalties. And Ms. Wade and the department determined that since this new enforcement began and our new investigative powers in 2007, that we were starting the clock then, not for what may have happened in 2005 and what horror stories may have been there in 2002. And Ms. Wade tells me that she was very upfront with the legislature about that at that time, with the Office of the Bill, Representative Rukavina, Representative Thomasoni, and others. So we have not determined at this point willful and repeated violations. So there has been no penalties assessed yet, but we have had significant recovery of salaries for some employees. Is that fair enough without getting myself in trouble?
Mr. Chair, just for the record, my last name is Brainerd. Right. I know it's difficult. No, that's all right.
That's my
chair problem. Has the same difficulty. No, I'm not at all wanting to raise the particular issues around the Mankato State enforcement, because I think that has been followed through very well. It took some time, but I do think there has been thorough investigating there. I'm more concerned overall, as I said, with the criterion for following through on complaints, because I know the number of complaints is probably much larger than the enforcement, and I don't know if the difference there is your capacity to enforce or your decision-making process for enforcement. And maybe it's some of both.
Mr. Chairman, you answered the way I was going to answer. I would guess that would be the case.
Thank you. Representative Poppy, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Commissioner. I had a couple of questions, and I'm going back to the investigators and support staff that you have. And I have a question about kind of the upfront costs and the current costs. Where does the money come from when you do start up a program or when you have something? And like you said, you expected $2.5 million, but initially you had nothing, I'm assuming, given to you. So just for a point of clarification, how do you start something up?
I believe, Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, in that case, we had some monies in CCLD, which are fee-generated, that we were able to utilize to begin the startup process. You are absolutely correct. You can't start today.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to gear up for these things. So we actually, I think, hired our first person in the independent contractor enforcement area. I think we hired our first person last July. And then we hired a few more in August. The law first applications became available on September 1st. But as you know, the folks who investigate and enforce have to know about the law. They have to know what they're looking for. We have to develop the rules. We have to develop the application forms. So we just couldn't start on September 1st. We had to ramp up, for about 3 months before that. And I believe we got the money from CCLG, which should be paid back, but I'm not sure we're going to be able to do that.
Mr. Chair, then just a follow-up, I guess, because is that now, as you are going to reduce your staff, if you get down to 6 people, even at $150,000, I'm sure each of them makes more than $25,000 a year. So where is the money coming from that you're... For the over amount of people that you have?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, I'm going to be coming to the legislature and asking for some general fund money. I won't do that, recognizing your difficulty. I suspect that the other licensing agency we have in CCLD are just going to have to cover and carry that unit for some period of time. And Mr. Chairman, when I mentioned the number 6, leaving 6 in the department, we still haven't made the determination if that's going to be 5 or 7. So I don't want, I would just assume not just have the number 6 tossed out. We're just in the discussions right now. We know we can't carry 10 people for 1,000 applications. We know we can't do that. And we have to make some reductions. But it will be from the CCLD fund that we do have that has some revolving account in it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Commissioner, I can appreciate the sensitivity around that. So thank you. I just want to change gears a little bit now and ask about, is there a difference between how handling injured workers and handling sick workers. I just know from experience in Austin that we had some situation where workers were not apparently injured on the job, but they were became sick because of employment. And I'm just wondering, is there, as far as your response to the time, the kinds of investigation that gets done regarding that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, no, health and safety. It's health and safety both. And our investigators give due and proper attention to both health and safety problems and concerns. I'm aware of what happened on the plant down there. From the standpoint of the investigations, the enforcement, the benefits that get paid, the rehabilitation, it's probably, I'm going to say for our investigators and workers' comp and through the whole process, it's probably easier to see if somebody cuts off a finger than if on a one-time incident than if all of a sudden there's respiratory problems that develop over years, a period of time. I'm going to guess that there's probably easier cases, you know, if you cut off your finger as opposed to if you had some respiratory problems that developed over 20 years. I will tell you, though, that it is health and safety, and even speaking this morning with our unit director, Jim Kruger, we were actually talking about two health issues this morning, and they put due and proper attention to health as well as just the safety, the injury. Would you want more than that?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Commissioner, I guess I would say that that would be an appropriate answer, and I would be hopeful that that's the answer. But as far as the time frame then, is there, when you talked about that, you know, you respond in such amount of time based on certain things, is there a period of time that you expect an investigation to be able to be concluded by in order to move on, in order to help the workers to be able to receive compensation if they're in a situation where they're not able to work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, when I was speaking about the response time, that was under a complaint to OSHA, not necessarily in the workers' comp system, which can last long periods of time. So specifically that was upon a complaint to OSHA if there was a health or safety problem. Our response time is the 3.3 days, I think, or something like that. Workers' comp cases, we're trying to enhance the quickness, the speed, the dispute resolution, the less confrontational nature of workers' comp. Obviously, some cases are harder to deal with than others. Some are more confrontational, maybe less directly provable. You know, cut off the finger, it's pretty easy to see. It's pretty directly related. Representative Poppy, I think the best thing I'd say is every case probably has its own life in the area of workers' compensation.
Representative Hilty, I believe you had a question.
I did, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Commissioner Swigum, I recently had an inquiry from a constituent that seemed to be related to the department, and in attempting to help him, I visited the department's website. I don't know if you do that with any regularity, but I was kind of interested in the documents we have before us. There's a bunch of phone numbers, but I don't think there's a single phone number on the department's website. I found that it's almost impossible with what is presented there for a user to actually make contact with a human being. Unless that has changed very recently, I'm quite certain that that's the case. And I would suggest that there are a lot of problems that arise that, although you have done a lot to anticipate what kinds of issues people might be concerned about, and there are all kinds of links to those, that I don't think it's impossible to, I mean, don't think it's possible to anticipate all of those. And I think it would be very helpful if someplace in the general public information that were possible to just talk to a human being that could direct an inquiry in the right direction.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilly will certainly take that under advisement. I'm going to have to go back and check with communication folks, or maybe Mr. Wachowski, can you respond at all? Can you respond now?
No,
you can't. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilly,
I guess he never called himself.
Let me give you this, Representative Hilly.
I would suggest you take a look at your website.
I will. Representative Hilly, I would suggest that if they call me, you know I will respond directly and get back to everybody. Can I ask Mr. Hilly, Representative Hilly, if this is a, was it a workers' comp issue or a OSHA issue or labor standards or...
It was a more general question about fair labor practices, and it was not something that lent itself to any of the categories.
To any of our specific units?
Yes.
Okay.
And Commissioner Sigum, you are not alone in having having to look at your website. There are it goes across all departments, and kind of interesting. Or in this day and age, to have websites is kind of out of date as we have them at the state of Minnesota. So, why don't we move on, because we're going to try and end here another 5 or 10 minutes. And Representative Norton, did you have a question?
Well, just a quick one, Mr. Chair, because I'm getting into an area, workers' compensation, that I do not know much about. But 2 points I want to make. One is a question about workers' comp. The other is just a comment that I'm going to start with, and that has to do with rulemaking. I just want to say how much I've appreciated the help I received working on the radon legislation that I did in 2007, but I also want to share the frustration I have that over 2 years later, we still don't have that. It went through rulemaking. It took a very, very long time. Your staff was wonderful. When I would call and query, I'd be told it'll be done in 4 months or 6 months, and then another 6 months later, I get a letter saying it'll be another 6 months, and this has gone on for an awful long time. So I'm just sharing my frustration in the length of time rulemaking is taking. And I don't expect an answer on that, just letting you know. The workers' comp question I have is really related to constituents when I meet them, and they claim, and again, I don't have knowledge about this, so I'm asking, that Minnesota's workers' compensation fees for businesses are extremely high compared to other states, and I had one constituent tell me he actually has his business located in the edge of, because we live in southern Minnesota, as you well know, in Iowa, because it's... He can pay less for workers' compensation there than here, and then he has businesses in both states. And so I'm just querying this. It's you know, perhaps my ignorance, but are we high compared to the surrounding states and other states, or are we comparable?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, to your first comment, I believe you did get a chance to talk to Assistant Commissioner Joe Wakeham in the Rochester meeting about the rulemaking process. And thank you for sharing with him your concerns. Are we high? I would say, Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, I've seen the listing, and I don't have it before me right here, of the various classifications. And of course, it varies upon occupation, profession, classification, your experience ratings from state to state. We are probably higher than our neighboring states. We are probably right in the middle of the states around the country. As far as workers' compensation premium per job class. Now, it does vary. The last statistic I saw said that we were 26th as far as cost of workers' compensation premium per job class on an average around the country. So we're almost right in the middle, although I would tell you if this continues for a long period of time, we're probably going to go from 26 to 30 to 40 pretty quickly as far as the cost of the premium. We were much higher in relationship to a comparison to our neighboring states a couple of decades ago. The gap has been narrow, I think, basically because of the 95 bill, Mr. Chairman, that passed, the workers' comp bill. So the gap's been narrowed, but are we still higher in South Dakota? Probably. Yeah. And are we still higher in Iowa? Yes. But you know, there's this trade-off you have to understand about maybe our benefits are a touch better. You know, right or wrong, we're right now about in the middle. But let's, Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, let's make some changes before we become in that chaotic situation and we lose jobs because of the steam of cost. Have to be competitive.
Representative Winkler, did you have a question?
I
do, Mr. Chair, but if you want to wrap it up, I can...
If it's a quick question, how about that? And I'd like to wrap it up in a couple of minutes or a couple, 3 minutes.
It's four quick questions.
Go after it, and I'll cut you off after two or
three. But they're all on one topic. Budgets, of course, are limited, and it's important, I think, to make sure that dollars go where they're supposed to go. We have had a number of recent findings about internal controls and internal auditors in state agencies, and I wonder if the Department of Labor and Industry does have any internal auditors on staff to ensure that controls are in place to watch the money in your agency in the mouth. And I don't remember if the legislative auditor has made any findings about controls or other kinds of issues in your agency in the last year, and if so, what the process would be for implementing any requested changes. So it's kind of one question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, we do have our financial management unit. We have to have a significant financial management unit because we bring in so much fees and we bring in so much workers' comp premiums that have to be assessed, and we have to figure out exactly what it should be. And you know, the fees generated by CCLD are very, very significant. I think it's in the neighborhood of $65 million. And Representative Winkler, many of our staff, their job is to be out on the road. You know, they have to be out investigating a workplace complaint that's come in. So and we do have staff on the road a lot. In the legislative auditor report of last summer, we basically got a very good clean bill of health, except for one situation where we had an employee that had been had charged and been paid $10,000 over and above what the auditor felt he should have received. My financial management department has investigated that, and it's taken some time, but we've now worked with the union because he's had union representation, and we've worked with the supervisor of the department, and we've determined that it's about $1,600, not $10,000, about $1,600, that this one individual basically was reimbursed that he should not have been. I think that will be taken care of, and we have also gone forward now and brought forward some more internal changes to make sure that one occurrence, now it's one occurrence over a 3-year period of time, members, it's, you know, not a lot, but still we don't want it to take place. It's still our bad, our fault. But we've instituted some internal changes now to make sure that that doesn't happen again. All the way from supervisors, you know, having to sign off on expense reports, to using certain more accurate ways to determine mileage for individuals. So I think we've instituted now in the last couple of months some real strong internal changes. For the one problem, Mr. Winkler, I apologize in the department. It comes back from about 2005 and 2006. Shouldn't have happened, but I think we've corrected it to the best extent we could.
Thank you. Mr. Sigum, thank you for coming today. You do return calls promptly, so if there are some concerns that members have, Commissioner Sigum will give him a call, and if his communications person can't help you, I'm sure Commissioner Sigum will. Thank you for coming to the committee today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you much. And to the three questions that were raised that we need to respond back to, Mr. Rakowski will do so.
Thank you. Members, I'm going to make two announcements. I wanted to remind those that weren't here for the first time when I announced the BioBusiness Alliance Destination 2025. Wednesday, registration 4 to 4:30, presentation 4:30 till 6. We have many things going on Wednesday evening, finance, ways and means, starting at 6. There's something with kids. I don't know what the heck it is. Destination 2025 is a roadmap for economic development. As you all know, I was rather pointed with the commissioner of economic development and employment and economic development about not having one. Here's one, and it covers ag, biofuels, pharma, med devices, manufacturing, nanotechnologies, nanomanufacturing, something that I've been very interested in. I think that with our focus on workforce, this might be very helpful for us. So, over at the History Center, 4:30 to 6 minimum, if you can make it. And with that being said, the other thing is we're going to have a short caucus, 15, 20 minutes at the most, up in room 546 for the DFL members. I think the Republican members are already at their caucus. And hopefully we'll be done. With that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.